The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. Paul Niefer is a regular guest on our podcast as we near the end of each calendar year. We'll discuss tax issues to close out 2020 and take a look at what may be on the horizon with the new administration in the White House in 2021. It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, brought to you by Pivot BioProven. It's time to rethink nitrogen. Pivot BioProven replaces nitrogen fertilizer with microbes that adhere to the crop's root system and apply nitrogen each day. 2019 performance report data shows Pivot BioProven consistently outperforms synthetic nitrogen fertilizers year over year, providing corn growers improved yields and a more dependable nitrogen supply that isn't lost to the environment. To read the performance report, go to pivotbio.com. And for more information on Pivot BioProven, just text PROVEN to 31313. Paul Niefer gets plenty of calls this time of year. He's a regular guest on our podcast as we talk about tax and accounting issues that confront farmers and ag businesses. Certainly, some of the topics we cover are similar every year, but this topic is always changing. And then, of course, is the topic that has generated plenty of interest. What changes might we see with a new administration in the White House? Paul always has some great insights. Here's what he shared with me. Paul Niefer, Clifton Larson Allen, joins me. Paul is a regular guest here on the podcast. Paul, I usually begin by asking where in the world you are today. Are you in Washington State or are you traveling today?
I am actually in my little home office, and our internet at our house is so bad, so I rented a little office in the town of Dayton, which is about 6 miles from my house. We're actually getting ready to buy another 15 acres right next to our place that's got a nice house and a barn and right on the river, so that'll probably close the week after Thanksgiving. Everything right now dealing with mortgage companies and closing, it's just slower than normal. So it's just taking some time. But I'm looking out my window at nice, beautiful sunshine, and but it's a little windy.
How were the crops out in Washington State this year?
Really good. I don't know if you noticed, the National Wheat Yield Contest winner was from our state up near Moses Lake. I think he ended up at about 207 bushels. Now that's on irrigated ground, but even on dry land ground, I think the top producer was not too far from where I live at 189. Now that might be a 10 or 20 or 30 acre field, but I know several fields in our area were in that 170 range on dry land wheat. So it was pretty good.
Good, good. Well, that's always good news to have. You know, you're talking with so many farmers really across the nation. I would be interested, you know, early this year, things looked pretty tough. And now as we speak, crop prices have certainly come up. And, you know, we've had some payments during the middle of the year. What is the financial outlook with a lot of the farmers that you're working with right now?
You know, it's sort of interesting. I was having a Zoom call, or whatever you want to call it, with Tyne a couple of days ago. And we had the, I forget the official name, but the Farm Journal, you know, event in Iowa earlier this year. And I was on a panel with a couple of bankers, and Tyne had asked me, you know, what do you think the outlook is? And I go, of course, I'm always half full, but I say, hey, I think things are going to be picking up pretty good sometime in the future. Didn't realize it was going to be this soon. I mean, between the CFAP 1, CFAP 2 payments, the like you say, the increase in pricing, you know, soybeans are getting close to $12. Corn's, you know, almost close to $4.50, at least on futures. Wheat pricing has certainly come up. You know, almost all the commodities have actually seen an increase. Also, earlier this week, I know Citibank came out with a report saying that they expect the dollar next year to drop by 20%. Now, if they're correct, you know, that means our commodities on the world market are now 20% cheaper. Now, that's not going to be across the board. But I think the instead of having the headwinds that farmers have had for the last 6 or 7 years, I think they're starting to look at maybe a little bit of a tailwind.
So if I'm in that position where maybe I'm picking up a little income here as we head into this end of this year, what things do I need to be thinking about from a tax perspective as we wind up 2020?
Well, certainly they need to be and I'm working on, matter of fact, I'm working on two or three of those right now, doing some year-end tax planning. They need to know their numbers. Once they get their numbers, they need to know, okay, if I want my taxable income to be, let's say, $100,000, and right now it's at $400,000, what are my options? And certainly the options are prepaying farm expenses, perhaps buying new equipment. If they haven't really done any sales yet and they know what their sales might be, they could go ahead and use what we call deferred payment contracts, where they go ahead and sell the grain now, but they collect the cash in January of next year. That allows us more flexibility. It allows us to go ahead and pick up that income next year. Or if we think, because of Biden becoming president, if that's happening, and let's say the Senate in Georgia goes a full Democrat, you maybe they're concerned about some higher taxes, tax rates next year. Well, then we can bring that income into 2020 instead of having it taxed next year. And then we're still dealing right now with the taxability on PPPP, on the Payroll Protection Program loans. IRS yesterday came out with Revenue Ruling 2020-27, and they were very, we disagree with it. I think it's going to get litigated, but the IRS says if you get loan forgiveness, it doesn't matter if it's in 2020 or in 2021, none of your expenses related to that loan forgiveness is deductible in 2020. So farmers need to realize that if they got a loan for $100,000 and they were thinking they could deduct that or deduct $100,000 of expenses this year, they're going to find out maybe that's wrong. But the problem is, Congress likely is going to fix that and make those expenses deductible. But the soonest we might know that is around December 11th, whenever the budget bill gets passed. May not happen then. It may not happen until January or February of next year, or it may never happen. So this year, we just have a lot more, I'm going to call it turmoil around tax planning. There's so many things that are sort of, is this going to happen, not happen? Also, I think the employee retention tax credit, that's something that farmers right now really should be thinking. Can I reduce my revenues for the fourth quarter of 2020 to be maybe 25% or more less than the same quarter last year? If they can do that, they possibly may get a tax credit that's refundable on those wages that they're paying to their employees, if any. So, like I say, this is the, in the almost 40-year career that I've had, this is the wildest year-end tax planning I've ever had. So it's just a mess right now.
Well, since it's wild, I don't know how to say this. Is it wild in a good way or a bad way? Sometimes wild gives us opportunities. So is this an opportunity for us to be able to have some flexibility with tax planning, or is it a, oh no, we've got
No,
some bad stuff
I
coming?
would no, I would say it's more the good wildness, if that's a technical term. I think it does allow us a little more flexibility, but we also, that's why I like the deferred payment contract. If we think that expenses are going to be non-deductible, I want to push that income into 2021. But if we find out the expenses are deductible, then I may want to bring that income back in to 2020. Earlier this year, we were thinking, we're not going to have a good year. Maybe want to try to maximize a net operating loss for farmers, because now they can carry that back 5 years. But most of the farmers I'm dealing with or looking at right now, they're nowhere near a loss. We're just trying to get their income down to a manageable number. So I know there's farmers out there that are probably opposite of that, but certainly the ones I've been working on here right now, it's not the same year-end tax planning as it's been in the last few years.
Certainly, I want to visit with you about what we might see on the horizon with an administration change. But before we do that, are there any things that we know, in a sense, for sure right now in 2020, some things that I need to be thinking about that we already do know to keep in mind as I'm winding up this year?
Not really. The CARES Act brought in, like I say, the PPP loan. Everybody really, I think, knows about that now. The net operating loss carrybacks we were talking about, people have known that. But as far as deductibility items for farmers, deferring income for farmers, there really hasn't been any changes in that area. It's just the interplay of everything else that's happened as far as, okay, what, how are we going to get to the number that we want it to be? So I wouldn't say there's anything really drastically new that's material. I mean, there's some miscellaneous things that CARES Act brought in, but those aren't really that material for a farm operation.
Every year we visit about this time, and I think I always ask you about prepaid expenses. Are there some things I need to be aware of? Because there are certainly rules about prepaying those expenses. So if I'm going to do that, what do I need to keep in mind here closing out this year?
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up. We're actually dealing with an audit. I had a call on that yesterday. We have an audit, and the taxpayer had some good records and not some good records. So the key, and too often I see what I call more deposits, but you really need to have an invoice. It needs to be an invoice from the supplier that indicates quantity, the price per unit, an extension. What is the item that you're buying? It can't just simply say chemicals. Can't even really say seed. It should say variety of seed, type of seed. You know, is it corn 114 day, whatever Pioneer or Asgro or DeKalb might be. It really has got to be that specific in order to get a prepaid. Also, the invoice really, it shouldn't call for interest. There shouldn't be the ability to really, quote, change your mind. Now, we know if the supplier can't supply it, that's a different matter. But really, you got to be very specific, because if you don't do that and you get audited, it's going to be very easy for the IRS to disallow those deductions. Now, you're going to get it the following year. So most these days we'll go, well, that's not a big deal. I get it the following year. Well, if it's material enough, they're going to assess a 20% penalty, and that penalty is non-deductible. So that's why it's important to make sure you get it done right.
You mentioned audits there. What are the things that trip us up that trigger the audits that you're seeing right now?
I'm going to say dollar amount, because these prepaids were fairly high. I'm actually testifying in some court cases coming up, and some of the returns I see, not that those necessarily got audited, but they have errors and from one year to the next, it forgets things. I think we already know the IRS has told us just in the last week or so that partnerships are now on their hit list for doing audits. They're supposed to double the amount of partnerships that they're going to do. But I don't know if that's going to be true in the farm arena. I think this is more true in the real estate and some of those other type areas. But, they have a certain scoring system internally. And if your point total gets high enough, then they're going to review it. Doesn't mean they're going to audit you, but they're at least going to take a look at it.
Okay, good. So let's get over then to looking at the horizon, because I know several of us are certainly thinking about that. You know, you mentioned about the change in administration and what could happen in Georgia with the Senate. And if both of those happen to go the Democratic way, then the Senate would have, it'd be 50-50 with the tiebreaker with the vice president, although that's assuming that everybody hung together, and that may not necessarily be the case on some of these issues. You've got Senator in West Virginia that's already said that he might break over. But what do you see then is if we don't have a Democratic-controlled Senate? Do we have a lot of changes? What do you think will be the first changes on the horizon?
I think it's going to be status quo as far as taxes. Now, when I say that, how willing is Congress going to be to both on the Republican and the Democrat side to enact certain revenue raisers to help cover COVID related costs? But, I think that's probably still 2 or 3 years down the road. I mean, I think the last thing that Congress wants to do on the rank and file members out there, a farmer, those typically are what I call rank and file. I think they hesitate to increase taxes too much, because that's really going to crimp any recovery that we might have. Now, we've seen the stock market do very well. We've seen housing pricing going through the roof. But if you start throwing some tax increases on there, that may be difficult. So I think it's going to be more status quo. Also, we know in 2022, when the midterm elections come up, typically, doesn't mean it's going to happen, but typically, the House not in power usually picks up 25 votes or so. So that would flip the House from Democrat to Republican. Even if, like you say, the Senate's 50-50, I don't think on any major tax increases they're going to get 50 votes. It'd only be 48 or 49. So I think, you know, it's probably going to be a little bit of status quo. Now, if I'm wrong, I can certainly give you an idea what might happen if you want to know that.
Sure. Yeah, let's talk about where would be the first things you think we might see changes in.
Well, I think certainly on the estate side, we know that Biden and the Democrat, most of the Democrats, and I don't want to say it's a political statement. I mean, they've already mentioned this. This is public knowledge, is that they want to reduce that lifetime exemption. You know, right now it's close to $12 million for each person. So a married couple could easily be worth $30 to $40 million and have it be estate tax-free with a little bit of planning. It wouldn't take much planning. You know, they want to drop that down probably to $3.5 million each. Or they want to eliminate step-up in bases, which would be very negative for a lot of our farmers. Or they want to have a capital gains tax at death. We know in Canada, their system, when somebody passes away, you owe capital gains on all your appreciated assets. Now, there's exemptions like going to a spouse, maybe going to a certain amount, going to kids and so on. But I'm more concerned about that for our farmers than I am the exemption amount going down, although neither one of them I like. Over on the income tax side, we know that Biden would like to bump the top rate back up to the old 39.6. Well, 37, 39.6. Yeah, I don't know if that's that huge of a difference. But they would like to eliminate the Section 199A 20% deduction if your income's above $400,000. And then if your income ends up being above $1 million, and not many of our farmers are in that bracket, but there's several out there, then they want capital gains to be taxed at ordinary rates. So you're really looking at a 43, I think it's about a 44, yeah, 43.4% tax rate. Because you're going to have the net investment in tax on top of it. So those are the major things that you're looking at. But we've also heard that they potentially want to eliminate 1031, the ability to roll over gains using 1031. For some farmers that really want to roll over land or real estate into other assets, that could be problematic. They've already eliminated it for personal property. So that, you know, that's something that isn't going to change. So we'll see.
You mentioned the stepped up basis, and certainly that would affect a lot of farm families. Don't you think, though, wouldn't that be a pretty difficult one, I would think, to get passed through, because it would affect so many people, even outside of agriculture? At least that's the way I see it. I wondered how you see it.
I think what would likely happen, because they did this about 30 some years ago, we had maybe 40 years ago, we had the elimination of step up in bases, but it got whacked out fairly quickly because back then it was difficult. You passed away. What did Uncle John pay for that piece of land? What did he pay for that stock in IBM? Well, these days with technology, the way it is in stock brokerage accounts, it's quite a bit easier to manage bases. I think what would happen is they would probably say, okay, we're going to allow step up in bases on maybe $2 million or $3 million of assets. And then everything above that is not going to have step up in bases, something like that, I think. So then if anybody's got, you know, a home that they inherit from their mom and dad that's worth $1 million, you know, they're going to be able to sell that tax-free. I think that's how they would smooth it out. And remember, they're saying, hey, this is only going to affect the rich people. And, you know, for them, the rich people is anybody earning more than $400,000 or definitely earning more than $1 million.
So, Paul, you alluded to something earlier, and it was something that I wanted to ask you about. Certainly, we've gone through a time now, and we've had some payments go out to not only farmers, but individuals. And to get through COVID and so forth, our government has spent a lot of money. And at some point, we probably have to begin to recoup some of that money because our deficit has certainly grown. So if that takes place 2, 3, 4 years down the road, how does whoever is in charge, whether it's the, you know, in the Oval Office or in Congress, either party is going to have to begin to try to close that gap a little bit, aren't they? And if they do, how do they begin to do it?
Well, are they going to do it via taxes? Or are they going to do it via inflation? That's I think that's partly why the Citibank thinks the dollar is going to go down. There's going to be a fair amount of inflation, but rates are still going to be lower, similar to what's happening in Turkey. Turkey's got high inflation and they've kept interest rates low, so their lira has just gotten hammered against the dollar. So is that going to happen to us? That's yeah, those are we've only had what positive budgets in the last 50 years, and that was really during the Clinton administration. Now, was that due to Clinton or was it due to just the economy doing fairly well? It's hard to know, but we're always going to run a deficit, I think, because we're dealing with government, and they much rather spend money than bring money in.
Right. That seems to be a constant, doesn't it?
No, it's very much a constant.
Well, we still have, of course, a lot of unknowns. But if we were to sum up then, thinking about closing out 2020 and looking to 2021, any advice beyond what we've talked about that you're giving some of your clients or just folks that that you're talking to, whether it's writing your column in the magazine and so forth?
Yeah, no, I think the advice is, A, you need to know your numbers. We still have a lot of farmers out there that really don't know their numbers. They rely on us to help them with their numbers, but they really should be knowing their numbers. B, I want to be even more flexible this year. That for a lot of my clients, I'm telling them, hey, I want you to ask for forgiveness on your PPP loan in 2021, not 2020, because that gives me the flexibility to. When I prepare the tax return, I can decide, well, okay, what expenses, if it's going to be non-deductible, what expenses do I want it to be that is non-deductible so I can help them with that. Doing that right now doesn't really, now if it's a $5,000 loan, probably don't care, but a $500,000 loan, $200,000 loan, that's a different matter. And I got several farmers that have loans of that size. It's just, really, tax planning and knowing what you need to do doesn't change too much year to year, but the key is you got to do it year to year and know what you don't know and then how to figure it out.
Paul, I always appreciate the time, and I know the listeners do as well. Your podcasts are always some of the most downloaded ones we have, so I appreciate your thoughts.
You're welcome. I enjoy doing it. Matter of fact, I wrote two columns or two blog posts yesterday, one on USDA coming out with changing their mind on management. That was a fairly interesting thing that they did. And then of course the other was the one we were waiting for. It we knew it was coming, but the IRS coming out with their guidance. So I sometimes I worry about having stuff to write about, but that doesn't happen very often.
And these days we'll probably continue to have more to write about.
You got that right. Between now and year end, I'm going to have plenty to write about.
Well, very good. Be safe during the holidays here.
I will. Thanks a lot.
As always, consult your accountant to see how the topics we discussed may impact you individually. That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.